Alrighty then. Welcome to your Tuesday drive. Ellie Jacobs from the Truman Project coming up, and a whole lot more, including Assemblyman Mark Levine, Drive senior political analyst Dr. Dave McCune, former MSNBC co-host, political analyst Crystal Ball, Congressman Jared Huffman, and a whole lot more. Joining us right now, he's been with us before, and it's great to have him back. His latest book is called Breaking Through Power. It's Easier Than We Think. He is Mr. Ralph Nader. Mr. Nader, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're well, very welcome.
Let's talk. I want to get into the Amazon and Whole Foods thing because you have some great thoughts on that. But let's talk about this most recent book, Breaking Through Power, It's Easier Than We Think. Tell us about that.
Well, I think a lot of people are discouraged about having an impact on their country and improving it as citizens. And I wanted to show how a little book can be written. It's only 140-page paperback, City Lights publisher in San Francisco.
Here. Yeah.
And how throughout history, and I give examples, less than 1% of the people organized in congressional districts to make changes in the country or in their locality can prevail as long as they reflect majority public opinion. So historically, this is what happened with women's right to vote and the labor and farmer movements in the 19th century and many other changes in the 20th century. Now, most people don't get that. They think it takes a huge number of people and all kinds of uprisings. And we regulated the auto companies with a very tiny number of 1% of the people around the country. Why? Because most people wanted better cars. They wanted safer cars for their children. They wanted more cleaner cars, fuel-efficient cars. And so we have demonstrated, so I'm not talking theory, that it's easier than we think. And then I describe all the long overdue changes in our country that are supported by conservatives and liberals and public opinion polls, but are never given mass media attention because the powers that be like to divide and rule between red state, blue state, conservative, liberal, on some key issues where they are divided on, like reproductive rights or gun control or school prayer, but not on the areas where they are on the same page, like, believe it or not, increasing the minimum wage, which has been inflation-gutted, 70 to 75% of the people, yeah. Cracking down law and order on corporate crime against consumers and the environment, breaking up the big banks, regulating Wall Street, these and many others, civil liberties, you know, and the Patriot Act that Rand Paul and Barney Frank got together to de-bloat the waste and the Pentagon budget. So there's a lot of examples. And by the way, in state legislatures, 15 state legislatures passed criminal justice reform on juvenile drug offenses, and that could only be done because conservative and liberal legislators got together. So that reflects my recent book also, which is called Unstoppable, the Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. Wow. Because once liberals and conservatives walk into a senator's office or a congressman's office, it pretty much is over. I mean, they know they cannot stop the unity of liberals and conservatives back home where they raise their families, work, and live. A lot of the ideology dissipates because conservative families get ripped off the same way as liberal families. They bleed the same way. They're denied health care the same way. And that's what the book Breaking Through Power is all about. And the core of the book is a formal citizen summons by citizens to their senators and representatives, summoning them to town meetings of the citizens' creation to discuss what the citizens want changed when the senators and representatives go back to Congress. It reverses the dynamic and puts we the people back in the sovereignty seat.
Yeah, I got to read this. Ralph Nader is with us again. I got to ask you about what's going on right now. What are your thoughts on this very wacky, not only last year through the election cycle, but what's going on these 5 months now that Trump is president?
Well, you get a big business administration connected with the Trumpsters, and is disarray. He hasn't even filled 300 out of 500 top appointments yet.
Right.
And a lot of the public servants are wondering what's going on, what they should be doing, not doing. Trump, of course, is his own email, Twitter, rather, machine that further discombobulates his own appointments.
Yeah. You know,
they wake up in the morning and say, hey, that isn't what I was supposed to be doing. And all this was made possible by the Electoral College, which has cost Democrats two campaigns, because in 2016, they won the popular vote and lost the Electoral College vote. There's no other country in the world where you win the popular vote and you lose the election. And still the Democrats are not moving to support Steve Silberstein, who's in San Francisco, a retired company executive, entrepreneur, who started an interstate compact drive so that states like California and New York have already passed laws saying once we, as states, pass laws reflecting 270 Electoral College votes, we will throw the Electoral College votes to whoever wins the presidential popular vote in the future. And he's already up to 165 votes, and he's one man with seven staff showing my point in my book, Breaking Through Power, it's easier than we think.
What about that, as far as the Founding Fathers? Obviously, you know, it was nothing like today back then, but, you know, they were thinking that smaller states would not have, you know, the representation, thus the Electoral College. I'm simplifying it, obviously, but...
Yeah, well, it is pretty mysterious now in the light of 200 years.
Right.
The small states, big states, it all depends on where they are politically, whether they're going to be ignored by the Republican presidential candidate or the Democrat. When I ran in 50 states, and I think that respects the voter. But now the Republicans or Democrats, for example, the Republicans will never campaign for the presidency in Massachusetts or New York. The Democrats won't campaign in Texas, Alabama, the mountain states. They don't campaign. Republicans don't put much effort presidentially in California. So half or more of the people never see presidential campaigns, and that's not good. So I think that we believe in majority rule. That's the way it should go.
We're talking to Ralph Nader here, folks. I know you don't have a whole lot of time. I do have to ask you, though, and I don't remember if I did last time you were on, but I have to ask you, and I'm getting a lot of folks telling me, make sure you ask them this. Simple question. Do you have any regrets about 17 years ago? Because had you not run, Al Gore would have probably been president. Any regrets?
Well, the studies show the contrary. That is that Al Gore won the popular vote nationwide by over 500,000. It was taken away from him first by the Electoral College, threw it into Florida. There are all kinds of corruption shenanigans in Florida, as we know, with the ballots and ex-felons that weren't ex-felons denied the vote. 300,000 Democrats in Florida voted for George W. Bush. It then went to the Supreme Court, where five Republicans outvoted four Democrats and stopped the Florida Supreme Court from continuing its recount. I'm responsible for all that? I mean, any one of those would have put Gore in the White House, including winning his home state of Tennessee, which he didn't do.
Yeah.
So I think they're using us, the Greens and me, as a scapegoat. The Democrats are very good about not looking at themselves in the mirror and finding out why they can't landslide a pretty bad Republican Party that represents Wall Street more than it represents the American people. And that's really my short explanation. The other one is everyone has an equal right to run for public office and get votes from one another. And either we're all spoilers of one another or none of us are spoilers.
Fair enough, without question. Let me quote this. Your office released this, I believe today, this statement concerning Amazon and Whole Foods. Quote, with every move of this Goliath, Amazon is inviting a thorough antitrust investigation by the Department of Justice or the FTC. Explain why you think this is such a bad thing. I don't understand it myself. I don't know. It's above my pay grade, but...
Amazon got its head start against brick-and-mortar small business on Main Street USA.
Sure.
Because it didn't have to pay sales tax, or it should have but didn't, in the various states. Now, that's like a 6 to 8% advantage in a thin-margin retail industry they were competing against. And the retail industry never got its act together to go to Congress and say, look, if we have to pay sales tax on Main Street USA, and if we have to pay our property taxes to support the local schools and other public services, then you better start taxing Internet sales like Amazon. They never got it together, and so the Republicans primarily blocked any taxation of Internet sales. So they got billions of dollars advantage. And then, you know, Bezos, a very smart businessman,
yeah,
he started plowing money back in to get more names, more customers, plowing money back in, incurring some losses. But now Amazon's become a monster. It's destroying Main Street. The grocery store in my hometown just closed, the only one, because they couldn't compete with orders from Amazon paper towels and things like that, which cut into their margin. That wasn't the only reason. He was retiring. But it touches everybody. And we have to ask ourselves, for convenience and speed and maybe a modest price advantage, what about the long-run effect of a giant company not giving dividends to its shareholders, a giant company run by one man dictatorially that abuses his workers enormously? New York Times and others have written the conditions in the warehouse are horrific. The speed up, the pressure, people coming down with illnesses like cancer and being told they're not up to performance and fired, busting unions, and emptying out Main Street, which is the fiber of the local community. Small business is the fiber of the local community. So in terms of antitrust, the main theory, it is very esoteric. It's called abuse of superior bargaining power, and it deals with Amazon's platforms and competitors that are on Amazon's platforms and different pricing strategies and information data acquisition. Now, in Japan and Germany, they have antitrust laws that can move against what's called abuse of superior pricing, of superior bargaining power. Now, this is the same theory that many years ago, Congress passed a law preventing railroads from owning coal mines. And, of course, they carried the coal. But if they allowed railroads to own coal mines, then they could twist that into a monopolistic practice to hike railroad rates to their competitor coal mine companies and push them out of business. So stay tuned. There's an article just appeared in Fast Company called "It's Time to Break Up Amazon."
Wow!
And it's by a professor from New York City. Very sophisticated argument. There's a book coming out by Franklin Foer, F-O-E-R, on breaking up and stopping Amazon. And let's see what the retail industry and the supplier industry does to save themselves from this kind of gigantic extinction. There are a lot of intangible factors in our economy. One of them is a vibrant Main Street where people meet, gather, make contacts, acquaintances, start plans for a better community. And he is intending to turn Whole Foods into a gigantic robotic chain where you walk in, you don't see any cashiers, you go and you pick whatever you want, it's just samples, the algorithm triggers the supply of the groceries and sends it to you or sends it to your home, and you never see anybody.
Right.
Now, I don't know why consumers are going to put up with that, but I'll tell you one thing. If consumers don't wake up to the long-range devastating effect of Amazon on the communities of this country, in return for immediate convenience, they're going to pay a horrific penalty.
I'd rather go into Whole Foods and pick out my own broccoli, Rob, personally. But
you're right.
Does this have to go through Congress since there's...
No. The antitrust division of the Justice Department is not keeping up with new technology and new corporate configurations like Facebook and Google and Amazon. They're still in the old area of fighting price fixing and cartels, yeah, and tying arrangements that raise prices to, wow, consumers. However, there's going to be more action. Amazon will overreach, I think, in some of their warehouses. There'll be some terrible situations, and maybe the press will start digging deeper. I really thank you for having an intelligent conversation on talk radio. Do you know how unfamiliar an experience that is?
Bless you. Ralph Nader, what an amazing career in life. I hope we can talk again, and I appreciate everything you do.
Well, we certainly can. Just call anytime, and thank your good listeners.
Thank you, Ralph. Thanks so much. Have a great week. Yeah,